One day, as a small child, Thomas Edison came home from school and gave a paper to his mother. He said to her, "Mom, my teacher gave me this paper and told me to only have you read it. What does it say?" Her eyes began to swell with tears as she read the letter out loud to her child. "It says, your son is a genius. This school is too small for him and does not have enough good teachers to train him. Please teach him yourself." And his mother did just that until she fell and passed away. Many years after Edison's mother died, he became one of the greatest inventors of the century. And one day, he went through some of her things and found that folded letter that his old teacher had wrote. And he opened it up. And the message written on the letter was, "Your son is mentally deficient. We cannot let him attend our school anymore, and he is expelled." Edison became emotional reading it, and then wrote in his diary, "Thomas A. Edison was a mentally deficient child whose mother turned him into the genius of the century." Words are so important. Words are so important that they can change the course of one's life. They're so important they can change the course of one's life. And that's one of few stories I've heard of people's lives that have been changed by what somebody had told them. So my question is tonight, what words are you telling yourself? That self-talk that goes on in your brain all day long, what are you telling yourself? Because words can change the course of one's life. So those mental pictures we set in our head is really painting the future that is about to unfold in front of us. So I remember growing up as a kid, I've always enjoyed reading, but there was one book in particular that if I could get my hands on them, I wanted them. And they were the Choose Your Own Ending books. Any of you guys ever read those? Ton of fun, right? You got to choose almost how the book ended. You know, there'd become a part in there and they say, "You want to choose this or that? If you choose this, turn to such and such a page. If you want to choose that, turn to another page." And you got to choose the ending. And you could go back, you know, again and read the book and go a different direction. But see, the self-talk that we got in our head is really choosing our own ending. We get to choose the ending of the story. But the question is, what are we telling ourselves? You see the picture that it starts to paint? I'll ask you right now. Are you happy? If your answer is yes, you probably told yourself you were. Now, some of us in this room probably aren't happy with life right now. You set yourself up for that. You told yourself you weren't happy. You don't believe me? You look out there in the world, you can see a homeless man living in a cardboard box and happy. And then you can find a multimillionaire living in a big mansion, and he's not happy. Why? Because they told themselves they were happy with what they had. That's the difference. The self-talk we got going on in the mind, it paints our picture. Now, I don't stand up here before you tonight saying I am one that has this figured out. The reason it's on my mind is because I'm figuring it out. But let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy chapter 30, let's pick it up in verse 19. It says, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants. By loving the Lord your God and obeying his voice and by holding fast to him. For this is your life and your length of days, that you may live in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, to give them. You see, he sat before them that day to choose life or to choose death. Now, why it talks about entering that land that he had promised them, why did they not enter the land that they had promised, were promised? Because of an unbelief, right? They didn't believe in the word that God had said. But they didn't believe what was right in front of them was what God had given them. Do we believe that is what is right in front of us is what God has given us? And do we take joy in that? Do we believe that the spouse that is sitting beside us is the one that God gave for us, handpicked for us? And then we dare to wake up in the morning and say we're not happy with the gift that God has given us? Something wrong with that picture, right? What about the money in your bank account? Are you happy with that? God has given it to you. And if you have a lot, then he's entrusting you with a lot. If you have a little, then take heed. What's the lesson? Are you supposed to be learning from him how to do things better? Is he testing your faith in some way? Because I know that at times in my life when the funds are short, the reliance on God is stronger than when the funds are not. You see, sometimes the adversity that's before us in life is the test to actually bring us to where we really want to be, to bring us to God. You know, that's a conversation I've had with my children on occasions. Why is there bad in the world? Because one doesn't come to God without it. And one does not come to know who God is if there is no opposite of that. How would you know how good feels if you've never felt bad? Right? You get over being sick with the flu for a week, and you know how good feels because you were sick, right? We know what good is because bad exists. It's a necessary in the equation. But every day we go through life and we have it set right before our eyes and we can decide, am I happy or am I not? You know, of course, I had this message on my mind today, so we went up and cut down a tree and we took in some sledding. And, you know, climbing the hill is never easy, but it's a little harder at 40 than it is at 14. You know, and I'm climbing this hill with my kids, and I'm like, this is hard. I don't know how many times I want to do this. And that was rolling through my mind, and I'm like, wait a minute. No, this is good. Because Evan was coming down the sled right at that time, just big smile on his face, you know, booking at about 20 miles per hour, giggling, you know. I'm like, no, there is joy here. Thank you, Lord, for putting me in the midst of this. Your beautiful creation with my beautiful children. But you see the war that can go on in the head? Where are we deciding to take those thoughts, that self-talk? What are we deciding to do with that? And what future are we painting for ourselves? Because you decide your ending. This is one of those childhood books. You get to decide the ending of your life. You see, the mind is such a strong, strong machine. You know, we can recall so many past memories, what it may be. I just went hunting with Drew and my son up at our old ranch. And it's funny how sometimes when you don't remember something and then you enter upon a place, maybe of your childhood or something, and all these memories just come flooding back. Like, our brains can store so much. And we can remember so much of our past. But there's also another facet of the brain. It's called the imagination, right? And in that word imagination, we have this word called image. And we're taking pictures of what is to happen. What kind of pictures are we setting up for our future? What are we telling ourselves about our present? Are we content? Are we happy? Do we see joy the next day, the days to come? You see, if you're in a situation you don't enjoy, you probably put that there, put yourself there through your thoughts. Let's turn over to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1 warns us about the way we think. In Romans chapter 1, verse 21 says, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish hearts were darkened." That word futile, it means worthless, vain. Speculations is your thinking. So they became vain in their thinking. They became worthless in their thinking. And these were the unrighteous men that didn't accept God. But in verse 19 it says, "Because of that which is known about God is evident within them. For God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what he has made, so that we are without excuse. See, we're talking about that self-thought, that speculation. And God has made it evident before us in the things that he has made, who he is and how good he is. But go back to that example about being in the midst of all that, and am I just thinking about the hill before me and how hard it is to get up that? Or am I stepping back and taking in his creation and the beauty of the trees, the snow, the sounds, but also in the beauty of those around us? God has made those special gifts for us. Now, have you ever given a gift to somebody and they're like, you thought it was like the gift, and you gave it to them and they're like, oh, okay. Right? We've all been there, right? A little bit? Yeah. Is that what we're doing to God, though? Like, he's gave us that special gift, and we're like, okay. Or do we see it for what it is, the gift from God, and treat it as it should be treated? Because if we're unsatisfied with what God has given us and where God has put us at this moment, if we have an unsatisfied mind, how can that satisfy God? Because isn't that what we want to do? Don't we want to be satisfying to God? But if we allow our thinking to be unsatisfied, how do we satisfy God? Let's turn over to 2 Corinthians. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, in verse 5 it says, "We are destroying speculations and every lofty theme raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ." We're familiar with this verse, right? Take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Did you guys catch the beginning of it, though? We are destroying every speculation, every thought, and every lofty theme raised up against the knowledge of God. See, it's important, though, to take that self-thought captive. Because that can be against God. It can be against who he is, what he's about. Right? Because he has told us to dwell on the unsatisfied, right? What we're not happy with. That we're not making enough money. That we didn't marry the right person. No. He said if anything is pure, if anything is lovely, peaceable, joyful, think on these things. We're supposed to think on the things that are pure, lovely. Now, we can find that if we're looking for it. But that's the key ingredient. What are you looking for? You get to choose the ending. You get to choose if you're satisfied or unsatisfied. You get to choose if you're happy with Aunt Susie's fruit bread, right? But the gifts that God have given us are precious. And we get to choose if we are satisfied with them or not. Let's turn over to Romans 8. Pick it up in verse 26. And in the same way, the Spirit also helps our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we should, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. And he who searches the hearts and knows the mind of the Spirit is, because he intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that God causes all things to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose. He causes all things to work together for the good. So see, if we're doing this self, we're paying attention to our self-talk, we're thinking our way through things, if things aren't going quite right, we can align that self-talk up with God's promises. And even if we can't see it right in front of us, we know that he is working something out here. In this moment, it may not feel good. Now, I told you, I've been thinking this through because it's been on my mind because I'm having to work through it. And I've thought down the line, and I know a lot of you have gone through a lot of hard things. And it's not easy. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying just say to be all bubbly and be all joyful and just not pay attention that it's hard. No, it is hard. But you have a choice to make. Are you going to be upset that you're there? Or are you going to ask what God's trying to teach you? Say, why am I here? What does God want in this moment? What does he want me to do? How does he want me to perform? Because just because something's not going right, somebody's not acting right, something hard has come upon our life, or we have been given more responsibility than we thought we should have, doesn't mean that we get to negate the fact that we are God's servants. And this is not my life. Remember, I gave that over to him. So this is my life in service to him. And so then we in turn say, okay, Lord, how do I glorify you in this? Not an easy task, not in those hard times always. But we can always reset that mind and go back to work and say, okay, I can do this. I can do better. I do want to glorify you, God. If we messed up in the past, we can say, I can do better today. But that self-talk is so important Where do you let yourself go? Where do you stay? Turn over to Romans. Well, we are in Romans. Let's turn over a couple pages to chapter 12. Where do we let that mind go? And in Romans chapter 12, verse 2, it says, "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." I mean, that's spot on when you're talking about self-talk and the renewing of your mind and lining it up with God. And a big reasoning there to prove the will of God, what the will of God is. So how do you get that self-talk in line with God? Let's turn over to Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1 verse 8 says, "This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success." You think about that word meditate, and it reminds me of another word, marinate. What's it mean if you're going to marinate something? Think about a good piece of steak. You're going to stick it in some juice and you're just going to let it sit in that spice in that juice. And you're going to let it sit there for hours, right? And just soak it all up. See, if we're meditating on God's word, are we letting our mind sit in it? Are we letting our mind soak it up? Until, like that steak, the flavor just oozes out. See, we want this word of God to be oozing out of us. We want people to look at us and see the good favor of God. Or in the cooking example, the good flavor of God. What flavor are they seeing when they look at you, your marriage, your character, your happiness? Are they getting a good taste for God? We'd hope so, right? But you see how this self-talk that goes on in our mind oozes out in our body, right? And therefore, we're painting a picture for the world of what God is about. Are we proving that good will of God? And there was an important phrase that Jesus said as he walked on the earth over and over again to people. Like when he cured the blind men. I believe he said it when with the woman that had the issue of blood. He said, "Let it be done according to your faith." And that is the key ingredient in our lives, in this self-talk. And when we're painting this picture of what our future looks like, really, what is our faith? You see, was Jesus limited to heal anyone? only by what he limited it himself. He limited it to the faith of a person. And your life is also limited to the faith you have. If you don't think your marriage is going to work out, it's not. If you don't think you're happy with your financial situation, you won't be. If you're not got your mind in the right spot, it's not going to produce anything good. Bad thoughts don't produce good things. Good thoughts produce good things. You see, the power of one's mind has done amazing things. You can go find countless numbers of stories of people that have overcome the odds. There's one story I'll finish with that I thought was funny in preparation of this message. Is there was a guy, and we'll just call him George, and he went to a doctor and felt terminally ill. He just wasn't getting better, so he decided he better go to a doctor, and the doctor said, "Yeah, buddy, we're sorry to tell you, you have cancer, and it doesn't look good. It's really progressed, and you're going to live about 3 months." Well, he figured he had 3 months to live, but he wasn't ready to die. He was going to go back to his favorite place, the island he grew up on. So he went back there, sat in the sunshine, enjoyed life, reminisced with old friends, ate coconuts, and 3 months went by, and he hadn't died. And then about a year and a half goes by, and he figures out, I better go back and see what's going. Well, actually, no. It said about 10 years had gone by, excuse me. And he decided, I better go back and just check up with these doctors and see what's going on. You know, they said I was going to die in 3 months. He went back to check up on the doctors, went in to check into the doctor. He told him he was going to die. The doctor was dead. But that, I don't know if that story is true, but there are true stories where people have defied the odds and overcome things that people said were before them and inevitable. How did they overcome it? In the mind. They told themselves it was so, and so it became. So we have that power to please Christ. Christ has told us it is so. If we can hold on to that picture that he has painted before us, what he has promised us will become our life. The only decision left to make is the same one that stood before those that failed to enter the promised land. Do you believe in the promises of God? If so, they're right in front of you. Take hold of them and do not let them go, and do not let Satan rob from you the joy that God has given you.